This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As usual, we have with us two guests from different political perspectives to discuss and debate the top stories in state and national politics, including President Barack Obama endorsing Hillary Clinton for president, and Donald Trump losing support from fellow Republicans, and much more. We also welcome the issues, the stories you would like to discuss. Call us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Chris Lotto is with us, a former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. Good morning.
Good morning and happy almost summer.
Almost summer. We're going to get into the low 90s today in southern Wisconsin. Yeah. Also joining us is Ed Falone, an associate professor of law at Marquette University. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Good to have you both with us. Well, let's start with Hillary Clinton becoming the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee. The first time a woman has been nominated for a major party in this country. I don't know. Ed Falone, a pretty historic moment?
A very historic moment in our nation's history. Something that I think many people thought was inevitable, but yet ever elusive, to have a female at the top of the ticket for a major political party in our country. We're well behind many other nations in the world. And it really demonstrates the drive and determination of Hillary Clinton as a politician over her career. She's worked very, very hard to achieve this goal. And unfortunately, in our society, there's still a fair amount of sexism that views drive and determination negatively when it's in a woman as opposed to a man. And we also are a society that tends to like politicians who achieve success through grace and effortlessness, think John F. Kennedy. And we don't necessarily look as highly on politicians who have success through hard work. And so I think she's been underappreciated, but 8 years as First Lady, 8 years in the Senate from New York, 4 years as Secretary of State, it's quite an accomplishment for her.
I'm going to suggest that we call Ed Falone back and see if we can get a little clearer telephone line so we can hear him more clearly. We can hear him, but there's a buzz on the line. And while we're doing that, we'll ask Chris Lotto your thoughts on Hillary Clinton clinching the Democratic presidential nomination.
Sure, not probably a huge surprise to folks. I mean, I think Bernie Sanders showed signs of life throughout the campaign and really energized a certain far left wing of the base and got them fired up. And so it'll be interesting to see now how that part of it plays out. I don't know if as of this morning he had officially dropped out, but I know he met with President Obama this week. We'll see how much longer he stays in. But it's pretty clear at this point anyway that there's no, you know, path for him. So it's not entirely unexpected. It is a milestone. You know, my personal hope would be, as always, that the candidates are judged on on their policy, on what they want to do, the content of their character, as opposed to it's time for a woman. Needless to say, whether Hillary Clinton were female or male, there are many other issues that we can talk about regarding her past and her present, frankly, with the email scandal that is an ongoing thing hanging over her head. Also more recently, the Clinton Foundation and how they get their money when Secretary of State Clinton was holding that position. And then just going back to decades of scandal that we've had to deal with under the Clintons. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting campaign. And again, not particularly surprising, but just like Republicans struggled to figure out how to handle Donald Trump, and nobody did, ultimately, it's going to be interesting to see how she decides to do it. And obviously the dynamic is interesting in that sense, because there is the gender issue and Donald Trump having a history of let's say, sour relations with women.
We'll certainly talk more about Donald Trump's comments in many different areas in just a moment. But let's go to Margaret in Madison, who wants to talk about Hillary Clinton. Hello, Margaret.
Hello, Joy. Say, this is a thrilling week. for millions of women and girls across the United States. I think just the historic nature of Hillary's nomination was really captured in the video that they showed Tuesday night. And I think a lot of us in Wisconsin were really pleased to hear Tammy Baldwin's voice on that video, too, talking about Hillary's accomplishments. And I had a chance to first meet Hillary when she campaigned for Tammy back in 1998. And in person, she's wonderful and warm and funny. And I think during this campaign, voters are going to get more of a chance to see that side of her. And I think we are just going to have a wonderful campaign where we really talk about the differences in our country. And I think Hillary is a terrific standard bearer. And I think she's probably going to be elected president in a wipeout in the Electoral College, and we'll have our first woman president. So I think it's a thrilling week, and it's going to be a thrilling campaign as well.
All right. Thank you very much, Margaret. We did call Ed back, and I think we have a little less noisy line now. So, Ed, what's your reaction to Margaret's comment? Are we going to have the first woman president of the United States?
Well, I think that certainly Hillary Clinton has the advantage going into the general election campaign. If she merely holds the same states that President Obama won and also wins Florida, she wins the Electoral College handily. And given the fact that Donald Trump has a disapproval rate among Latinos somewhere around 85%, I think Florida is looking pretty good right now. So, yeah, the Electoral College math looks very good for the Democrats. I think the media is going to try and portray the campaign as being closer than it really is. I think the Republican playbook, I mean, as we heard from Chris, it's basically going to be to try and drive up the negatives. They don't have any positive message to sell with Donald Trump. They don't even know what Donald Trump's message is. So I think there'll be a lot of mudslinging. It's going to be a very ugly campaign. But in the end, I think we'll get where everyone knows we're going to get, which is Hillary Clinton will probably prevail.
You want to comment on that, Chris?
To say in June, where we have a truly unknown quantity in Donald Trump, and to call it for Hillary Clinton is very optimistic. And, you know, I think that, you know, to Margaret's point, look, Hillary Clinton has her admirers. She's been in the public eye for two decades and going. So, and there are going to be folks who respond to the notion of, hey, it's a woman, it's a woman's time, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, that message will appeal to some. But I think it's, you know, any poll that you see right now saying, oh, it's, you know, Hillary's to lose and all that, I think is, you know, you just have to dismiss that out of hand. It's way too early. And as we've already seen in this cycle, everything has been way too unpredictable to call it for one or the other. It is interesting, too, that we're already talking about, you know, Electoral College, which to me is a little bit of hair splitting, not this idea that, oh, she's going to sweep the popular vote by a giant margin. It's already admitting, yeah, it's probably going to be a little closer than people might think.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned it in your comments, Chris, that President Obama met with Bernie Sanders. And I guess they talked about how to stop Donald Trump from being elected. Bernie Sanders says he's going to do all he can to defeat Donald Trump, but he's not ready to drop out of the race yet. I think he was at least going to stay through next week with the District of Columbia, though even on election night, Super Tuesday, he said he was going to stay, you know, he's going to fight until the convention. Ed Falone, do you see the Democratic Party unifying behind Hillary Clinton, or are Bernie Sanders supporters going to make some problems for her?
Well, I don't think it's going to be absolute unity, but I think more Democrats will unite around the Hillary Clinton campaign than Republicans will unite around the Donald Trump campaign. So on a comparative basis, I think the Democrats will do better coming together. Bernie ran a very good campaign. He really resonated with a lot of Democrats and independents. I think he overachieved from what even he expected. He accomplished a lot in creating a very formidable donor database and email communication database, which will be extremely useful should he share that with the Hillary campaign. And, you know, the real question is, what does Bernie want? He's not going to be the nominee. What does he want? I'm not sure he knows what he wants, but I think probably he will. The cost of his support for Hillary will be some promise to try and reform the primary process, maybe reduce the role of superdelegates on the Democratic side. stronger opposition to free trade deals, and some sort of vague commitment to address income inequality in a Clinton administration. But I think that'll get hammered out. President Obama's acting as the unifier in chief, and I think we will see probably a more unified Democratic Party than Republican Party.
Do you agree or disagree, Chris?
Well, you know, first of all, flashback to 2008, and when the shoe was on the other foot and people were calling on Hillary Clinton to get out and make room for Barack Obama, now 8 years later, here we are with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. So, you know, what goes around comes around. But it is understandable that, you know, Bernie Sanders and his supporters are reluctant to jump out. You have to think that there have been millions of people out here who have been excited about a Bernie Sanders candidacy, a ton of volunteers who have lived and breathed and worked for Bernie Sanders, and it's hard for them to just overnight say, up, all over, you know, pack up your tent and go head over to Hillary's side of town. That is a difficult thing for folks to, you know, to swallow, and I get that. It takes time to accept the fact that your person's not going to win. So, you know, I think a lot of Sanders supporters and perhaps even Bernie Sanders himself needs to sort of wrap their heads around the reality that there is no you know, path in the Democratic Party for Bernie Sanders. I mean, if he were to suddenly say, I'm going to run as an independent, that would be an interesting race, but I don't have seen no signs that that would actually happen. So I think, you know, for the Sanders supporters, they just need time to get used to this idea, and I think they'll come around, as I think you're starting to see on the Republican side, too, with Donald Trump. It was the same thing. You had 17, 18 candidates early on, and it was, you know, took a long time for people to wrap their heads around the fact that it was, you know, Donald Trump is the nominee. People are still struggling with it. I'm still struggling with it. So, you know, that it just takes time for the party to sort of coalesce around that candidate, and that's understandable.
President Obama formally endorsed Hillary Clinton yesterday, saying, I don't think there has ever been someone so qualified to hold this office. He and Clinton will make their first joint appearance, their first campaign stop together, Wednesday in Green Bay. Chris, first, I guess northeastern Wisconsin's pretty important during this election year.
I think it's a sign that northeast Wisconsin will be important and that Wisconsin in general will be important. It is telling that they recognize right away that they need to come to Wisconsin. Now, we as a state have not gone for a Republican, I think, since Reagan, if memory serves. There have been some close races along the way. I've been involved in some heartbreakers back in, you know, 2004. This is clearly a sign that Wisconsin's going to be in play, and I think they recognize that they cannot take Wisconsin for granted again, even though it largely votes Democratic in the presidential race. So I think that's why. And just going back to that, you know, I don't know that Hillary Clinton is, I forget the president's words, the most qualified. Yeah, well, that's okay.
I don't think there's ever been someone so qualified to hold this office.
Sure said without a trace of hyperbole. But, yeah, I think it's great, and I think you're going to see Wisconsin is going to be back in the spotlight, at least at this point. And again, it's such an interesting battle because there are so many unknowns out there, particularly on the Republican side, that I think it's going to be a fascinating race to watch. And we're lucky in Wisconsin that we have you know, the opportunity to play a key role in deciding who our next president's going to be. It's going to be fascinating.
So, Ed, what do you make of President Obama and Hillary Clinton coming to Wisconsin first off?
Well, I feel very fortunate to be living in a real battleground state, where clearly Wisconsin's going to be one of the key states in the fall election. I think, you know, we've been going Democratic in the presidential elections, and that's because turnout is higher in the fall election, and therefore the higher the turnout, the more Democratic votes are cast, as opposed to, say, spring elections or off-presidential elections when turnout's lower and we're closely divided state that the Republicans often prevail in those low turnout or lower turnout elections. For me, the real interesting thing is going to be to watch the Republican Party establishment. I mean, this is the one state where Governor Walker, the conservative media, the party leaders in the state were able to enforce a very disciplined never Trump moment and resoundingly reject Trump as unfit and unqualified. And I'm just anxious to watch how these individuals in the Republican Party pivot and suddenly try to maintain discipline and tell all of the Republican voters, no, actually, Trump is the guy and you must support him. And I honestly don't know how they're going to do it.
Yeah. Before we get Chris to respond, Gary on Facebook writes, Clinton and Obama must be thinking that Wisconsin hasn't fallen for the Trump phobia enough yet, and it may need some extra personalized fear mongering. I am thinking that a state that voted for Scott Walker three times may not fit very well into Hillary's pocket. What do you say to that, Chris?
Well, we're a wacky state in the sense that, you know, we will think nothing of, for example, you know, a hypothetical, we would vote for Hillary Clinton and Ron Johnson at the top of the ticket. We would split. We do that. We have a long history of doing that in Wisconsin, and that's entirely, you know, possible. You know, look, it's... The whole Trump thing has been, you know, obviously a phenomenon. I think that Republicans are going to continue to struggle with it, as you saw with the latest flap this week over the comments that Trump made about a judge involved in a case that Trump is involved in. You know, he suffers from terminal foot and mouth disease, and yet, you know, it doesn't seem to impact him too much. I mean, yeah, you could point to all these polls, well, you know, only 15% of Hispanics, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, it, certainly throughout the primary, nobody could figure out how to take him down. And that includes the Republican establishment. And he was taken seriously only when it was already too late. So, yeah, but, you know, to Ed's point, I think he's right. You know, people are struggling. I mean, you had Paul Ryan just this week, for example, you know, come out of a closed door meeting and they basically said, yeah, I'm on board with Trump. And then like within a day, you know, he's also walking back, you know, the statement again that Trump made about the judge. And you're going to be hearing a lot from Republicans that, well, at least it's not Hillary. I think that's going to be the mantra. But, you know, is that a winning mantra? I don't know.
We'll talk more about Donald Trump and his troubles this week. A lot of fellow Republicans are you know, criticizing his comments regarding the judge and pulling back their endorsements. We'll talk more about that as our Week in Review continues. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you'd like to join in. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Our guests today are Chris Lotto and Ed Filone. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Chris Lotto, a former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant, and Ed Filone, an associate professor of law at Marquette University. We welcome your questions and comments for our guests, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Before we get to the Republican side of the ticket, one more note on the Democratic side. Massachusetts Senator and icon to many progressives, Elizabeth Warren, also endorsed Hillary Clinton just yesterday, calling her a fighter with guts. She also said that Democrats are often too soft and willing to compromise while waiting patiently for change, which is why Clinton is what the country needs right now. She also, Warren, really went after Donald Trump. Your thoughts, Ed Filone, first on the importance of Senator Elizabeth Warren endorsing Clinton.
Well, I think it's very important. I think the success of the Bernie Sanders campaign is what made it important. And this is sort of the irony here that the Republicans are going to demonize Hillary as this crazy radical, but the irony is her whole career, and of course Bill Clinton's career, they've been firmly in the center right of the Democratic Party and roundly attacked from the left. And even today, Bill Clinton finds himself under attack from the left of the Democratic Party. I think the Bernie Sanders campaign and the fact that Trump is her opponent is forcing Clinton to go Hillary Clinton a little more left than she would have liked to have done, and seeking the support of Elizabeth Warren and maybe considering Warren for the bottom of the ticket is just further evidence that Hillary is moving left.
Yeah, Clinton actually said that Warren was qualified to be a vice president. You think, Ed, that that's being thought about?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It would help to solidify the Democratic Party, win over many of the Bernie supporters to see her on the ticket. It does focus on economic issues for the general campaign, because Elizabeth Warren is seen as really a protector of consumer interests and protector of the middle class, and that would help the economic message.
Mm-hmm. Chris, your thoughts on Elizabeth Warren's endorsement and VP possibilities?
Well, yeah, I mean, she's a darling of the left, and I think that when a lot of Democrats look at, putting up the first female major party candidate for president, they probably are saying to themselves quietly, why not Elizabeth Warren instead of Hillary Clinton? I think, you know, this is, again, it's a continuing process of, you know, Bernie is out in everything but name, and officially making the announcement. So, you know, you're going to see the party sort of fall in line and begin to mend fences. And, you know, the other thing, too, with President Obama, you know, trying to draw a line in the sand and give Bernie a friendly shove out the door. There's no love lost between the Obamas and Clintons, and that's been very well documented over the years. So, you know, President Obama is doing what he needs to do at the top of the party, falling into line and endorsing Hillary. So I think you're going to see a number of these other ones now that were in support of Bernie Sanders start falling into line as well. And these are, you know, some high profile ones that came together this week to help sort of close the book on this particular chapter of the campaign.
Yeah, I did hear Jill Stein, who was a one-time Green Party presidential nominee, who likely will be again, actually invite Bernie Sanders to come over to the Green Party and run as for president as a Green Party candidate. Ed Flohn, do you think that's possible?
Well, it would be sort of a move of pure ego, and I don't see Bernie Sanders as ultimately motivated by ego. I mean, obviously, it's hard to let go of a campaign when you're running, and I'm sure Chris will share anecdotes of candidates. I can tell you myself, you know, it's hard to stop that adrenaline rush, but ultimately, I don't think Bernie is motivated by ego, and it would be political suicide for Bernie to launch an independent bid, and I think he would recognize that. He can have influence in a Clinton administration. He can be an elder statesman, or he can be a pariah, and I don't think he would choose the pariah route.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the specter of independent campaigns, you know, hovered over both parties. I mean, Republicans, we had to deal with that as well when Trump would make noise about how, you know, if things weren't going to go his way, that, you know, the possibility of an independent campaign was always dangled out there as well. To Ed's point, it would be a move that would be, you know, certainly egocentric for Bernie Sanders to do that, and I think it would only benefit Donald Trump. I think that's pretty obvious. Bernie Sanders would peel votes away from Hillary Clinton and, you know, open the door wide for Donald Trump to step in more easily. So it would be a disastrous move, and, you know, we'll see if cooler heads prevail.
Okay, now to Donald Trump. Donald Trump and many of his fellow Republicans are at odds over comments that he made about the federal judge overseeing the Trump University Law School. Trump called the judge biased because of his Mexican heritage. Some Republicans, including Governor Walker, are walking back or rethinking their support of Trump due to those remarks. Chris, how damaging is this whole situation to Trump, or is this going to blow over?
He has inserted his foot in his mouth so many times that remains not only standing, but the apparent standard bearer for the party at this point. I don't know what it's going to take to bring him down. Now, the dynamics of a general election campaign are obviously far different, so we'll see how this is used against him. And, you know, Donald Trump has decades of politically incorrect stuff that opposition researchers are just salivating to start letting out there. So, you know, this is going to be far from the first time. But now, you know, the difference, of course, is he just said this now. And I think that Paul Ryan, you know, said it best when he said this amounts to, you know, this is textbook racism. And Paul Ryan is absolutely right. And you are going to see many, many, many stories in the months ahead of Republicans supposedly rethinking their support of Donald Trump. This is going to cause a lot of heartburn over the next several months.
Your thoughts, Ed Flohn?
Well, I think, as has been noted in the media, Donald Trump is about to turn 70 years old. He's not going to change. He's not going to grow. He's not going to mature. He's not going to become more presidential. He's not going to become more informed on policy issues. He is who he is. And that means that he's out of control. Every day, the Republican Party elites around the country are going to rush to the morning newspaper or get online to see what did Donald say, and am I going to have to respond to it? Am I going to be asked to respond to it? And should I disavow the statement but support the man? Should I disavow the man? Should I leave the party? What do I do? This existential crisis. Look, I think that in terms of the national campaign, there's a brief moment after someone secures the nomination of a major political party when the public takes a look at that individual and they can define themselves and narratives get set. And it's after that moment the narrative is set and people make up their minds. And that's what happened to Mitt Romney. That's what happened with the Sarah Palin, John McCain ticket. There's a brief moment, people look, and then the narrative gets set. And the problem with Trump, in addition to the fact he's supremely unqualified for office, is that his disorganized campaign, his disorganized style, is preventing him from setting a positive narrative. And right now, the narrative is being hardened against him, not being helped by many members of his own party. And he can't undo that damage. It's going to be set in stone.
I do think, I'm sorry to interrupt, Joy, I just want quick point. I do think that he has shown signs that he can temper or moderate and pivot to a general election mindset. You know, unfortunately, it's, at this point, is very inconsistent.
Well, I was going to just say that we have a comment from Michael on Facebook who writes, when Ryan said that Trump's attack on the federal judge alleging bias was textbook racism, and then in the next breath said he still supports Trump and will vote for him, wasn't Paul Ryan being a textbook hypocrite?
Well, that is something, and I was just reading an op-ed about this last night. I can't remember who wrote it, so I can't properly attribute, but it was something to the effect of, you know, you can't, on the one hand, rip Donald Trump and say all these, you know, things about what he's saying and then be a supporter. Does that make you a hypocrite as well? And I think that is the dark night of the soul that a lot of Republicans are going to have to experience is whether they square themselves with that reality or they don't. And do, you know, I don't know what, you know, it amounts to, and this is true for a lot of Democrats as well with Hillary Clinton. It amounts to holding your nose and voting for the party and thinking that at least your candidate is better than the other one. As I said before, that's going to be a key motivator for Republicans in the months ahead is that, well, at least it's not Hillary. And, you know, is that something that you can build a successful campaign around? I don't know that it is.
Go ahead.
I just want to say that, it's not just exploiting racial division. It's the fact that Trump rejects the entire conservative orthodoxy, right? He opposes free trade. He has said he's open to increasing taxes on the wealthy. He's against foreign intervention and a muscular, aggressive foreign policy. This is all conservative dogma that Trump has rejected. And the question is, if you're a Republican and you endorse and support Trump, even beyond the racial exploitation that he brings to the race, you know, what do you believe in? That's the real question.
I was going to say that didn't Governor Walker, while walking back his comments, still say that a Trump presidency would be better than a Hillary Clinton presidency, Chris Lotto? Maybe something along those lines, that to Republicans, Trump is still better than Hillary Clinton.
I think that, yeah, I guess... you know, and it's the same thing I've been saying, you know, off and on all morning, is that, you know, you're going to see these sort of pieces a lot. And, you know, everywhere these candidates go, they're going to be asked about Donald Trump. They're going to be asked whether they defend Donald Trump and whether they support him. And if you support him, then you must support, you know, the racism, xenophobia. You know, you pick the name off the list that Ed ticked off before. And you know, so that is something that Republicans and candidates up and down the ticket are going to have to deal with. Well, if you're a Republican, that must mean you're a Trump supporter. Therefore, that must mean you're a racist and this, that, and the other. So, of course, that's ridiculous, and that's not what it means. But they're going to have to come up with their own answer that squares with their support, whether it's public or private, of Donald Trump.
Yeah, well, do you put party ahead of country? That's what it boils down to. Not because you support Trump are you, by, you know, implication or osmosis, becoming racist yourself. That's not the issue. The issue is, are you demonstrating you put your political party and grasping power ahead of what's good for your country? And I think that's really ultimately what the Republican Party is facing as a party. you know, aside from individual politicians and how they respond to the latest Trump bombshell, is the Republican Party ultimately interested in the good of the country as a whole or just its own self-interest?
Yeah, we mentioned that Governor Walker backed away from endorsing Trump over those judge comments. He told a Madison TV station that it is sad to have such poor choices for president right now. There was also on the website, the conservative website Red State, a rumor that was floating around that Governor Walker would accept the GOP nomination if Trump implodes, and that that supposedly was being whispered about, that Trump would implode and Walker or some other Republican would get the nomination. Walker was asked about that, and he says he's focused on being governor and that we could talk about hypotheticals all day long. Well, that doesn't sound like that's ridiculous as an answer.
Yeah, and I mean, just to go back on this, you know, to kind of come back, and I'll come back to the Walker thing in just a moment, but I think that, you know, when you look at, you know, folks up and down the ticket and this whole idea of whether they have to defend Trump and Ed's point about how, well, you know, it's a question of, you know, do you want to do things for the good of the country, which by implication, I'm sure on Ed's side is, that means you vote for Hillary Clinton because she's going to be better for the country. Highly debatable. But beyond that, I think what you might end up seeing is a lot more focus away from Trump, who has kind of indicated all along he's going to run his own campaign. He's ultimately not going to take anybody's advice. He's going to have a campaign apparatus that you know, I know from what I've heard and from people I know that are affiliated with the campaign, it is not one that prides itself on great organization. I mean, it is a run by the seat of your pants sort of deal, and I think remains that way at this point, which is not a good sign. But what you're going to see is Republicans perhaps turning to other races that they think are winnable, for example, the U.S. Senate race. And so, you know, a Russ Feingold ought to be having some sleepless nights thinking that the Republican Party will devote their attentions to other races to help other candidates. That would not surprise me if they channel their attention elsewhere. On the Walker point, I don't see how Scott Walker becomes the nominee. I mean, as we know, the presidential campaign flamed out in just a few months. You know, he barely got through a few contests. I mean, you know, if they were floating, say, Marco Rubio, for example, or Ted Cruz, who I know is also not particularly well-liked with large sections of the Republican Party, but that would make more sense to me. But the idea that Scott Walker, there's no way I don't think that happens.
Yeah. I think I'm glad Chris mentioned Russ Feingold, because I do think the contrast between Russ Feingold, who when he was a U.S. senator was known for taking principled positions and even bucking his own party leaders when it conflicted with his own personal principles. The contrast of him as a public servant and a statesman versus Donald Trump and some of the other voices in the arena today, I think couldn't be more stark, and I think this will play to his advantage in the fall. In terms of a draft Walker movement, I'm sure Walker would love to have his name mentioned as a possibility. He wants the profile. He wants people to forget how spectacularly inept his presidential campaign turned out to be. But the reality is what's left of the Republican Party and the bits that are still hanging together by a thread would totally fall apart if there was an attempt to deny Trump the nomination.
Let's go to Tracy in Green Bay. Hello, Tracy.
Hi. I just have sort of a thought that I'm still kind of developing, but I'm wondering what you all might think about this. If we look back to 2008, Trump spoke out in support of Hillary. And I sort of wondered, you know, ever since he started talking about running on the Republican ticket, what that was about, because that's a pretty big switch. And so I wondered if this was all a major conspiracy to support Hillary. He has enough money to waste the time and the energy to do all of this to make sure that she gets into office, which, by the way, like, I'm a Democrat, so I don't mind. But what it comes down to is, in the process, he's completely ruining the other party, which I'm not so sure is great for the country. For example, with, you know, Paul Ryan coming out and saying, well, this is textbook racism, but I still support him. So, you know, high-level Republicans coming out and basically being hypocrites, and we can thank Trump for that.
So is Trump doing this to destroy the Republican Party or to help Hillary get elected? What do you think of that, Chris Lotto?
Well, he would have to be a mastermind of proportions that I don't think he possesses. So, yeah, you know, and when I was on with Joe Winicky not too long ago, we had this discussion and this idea that this was something of, you know, like a frivolous campaign, and Trump was just giving this a spin and to boost his brand or whatever. And, you know, as Joe pointed out, and I think Joe is right, ultimately, you know, you don't get into these things as a hobby. I mean, when you get in, you want to win, and you don't give your life over to the rigors of campaigning and pump your own money in on an investment that, you know, this idea that you're going to blow up a party or you're trying to, you know, secretly help Hillary Clinton and all that other stuff. I mean, you know, there is no denying that, you know, Donald Trump's record over the years has been extremely erratic. But you'll recall, you know, and in 2012, you'll recall that he was it might be even earlier than that. I'm sorry, before the 2012 election, that he was a thorn in Barack Obama's side with the whole thing about the birtherism and all that other stuff. Yeah. So Donald Trump has long flirted with the idea of running for president. Of course, in 2012, he didn't do that. But yeah, I mean, there's no denying that there's a real inconsistency in his record over the long term that you kind of go, well, you know, is Donald Trump about, you know, Donald Trump? Or is he about America? And what does he want to do? And can we see something a little more specific from you, please? And how about, you know, tamping down these racist statements and all this other stuff? It's fascinating to watch and more than a little upsetting, and is certainly giving a lot of Republicans heartburn as they try to cope with this.
Let me go ahead, Ed.
I disagree briefly with Chris. I think the Republican Party has demonstrated that they've created a career path for failed presidential candidates in terms of, you know, Mike Huckabee, Newt Gingrich, Herman Cain, you know, hosting cable TV shows, writing books, speaking fees. And I think it's quite logical that Donald Trump may have said, you know, I could turn this campaign into a second career. And it's been done, and it will continue to be done because of the conservative media. They sell a product. They need a spokesperson. And Trump probably figured, I can be that spokesperson. And he never thought he would actually prevail.
Well, and we do know that Hillary Clinton has a way with getting a book deal that's worth millions and giving speeches and not releasing the transcripts to Wall Street interests and, you know, making a ton of money off of that, too. So, you know, depending on how this race goes, I think if she loses, she will be a failed candidate who will be just fine in terms of financial benefit.
Let me end this segment on a somewhat light note. Hillary Clinton's campaign and Donald Trump battled it out on Twitter yesterday. I think it was after President Obama endorsed Hillary Clinton that Donald Trump tweeted, you know, crooked Hillary something or other. And then Clinton's campaign just responded with the tweet, delete your account. And it just, that sparked a nationwide meme, you know, a lot of people reacting to that. Delete your account apparently is an insult and, you know, just, you know, go away or, you know, something like that. Will, though, Donald Trump drop out, delete his account, Chris Lotto?
I mean, at this point, I don't know. He's not going to delete his account. He loves that thing, as far as I can tell.
Ed Flone?
Well, I first have to ask my son what that means, and after he explains it to me, then I can answer your question.
We need to turn our attention now to the state of Wisconsin and some state political stories. When we come back, we'll talk about job creation efforts in Wisconsin. We'll also talk about Milwaukee and violent crime and some other issues. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you'd like to bring up a state of Wisconsin story for the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different political perspectives about the top stories in politics this week. Our guests this week are Ed Filone, an associate professor of law at Marquette University, and Chris Lotto, a former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. Turning our attention now to the state of Wisconsin. New job numbers came out this week from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, deemed to be the gold standard of employment figures, showing that Wisconsin ranked 36th in private sector job creation in 2015. Governor Walker defended his job creation record, saying that he never made any promises about state rankings and that all of the jobs lost during the recession have been recovered. He also noted that Wisconsin's job participation rate is higher than the national average. Democrats responded that it's time for a special session to boost jobs. We'll start with you, Ed Filone. Just broadly, your reaction to our ranking and how you think Wisconsin is doing economically.
Well, I was thinking, Joy, you've been kind enough to have me on this show for many years, and I'm just a broken record on this. It's the same problem. Focusing on manufacturing, trying to lure manufacturers across the border to Wisconsin is a short-term, ineffective way to create jobs. The way to create jobs is to focus on emerging technologies. It could be mass transportation. It could be life sciences and biotech. It could be water tech. And to fully invest and create business partnerships with a very high standard university system. Unfortunately for politicians, those kinds of investments don't pay off until years in the future. They're not tied to the next four-year election cycle, so they're not interested in investing when someone down the road will get credit for the jobs and not themselves. And so we're stuck in this pattern where, really, I don't even know what the economic policy of the Walker administration is anymore.
Chris?
The job numbers are solid. Certainly, if you look at it in light of the Bureau statistics number, it is somewhat less impressive. But, you know, that's on the surface. And when you drill down and look at the number of jobs being created under Scott Walker versus the number of jobs lost under Jim Doyle, it's solid. If unspectacular, as we all know, Scott Walker set a personal not a personal goal, but a state goal of 250,000 jobs in 4 years, and that goal has not been met. And, of course, that is a statement that continues to haunt the governor to this day. But gains are being made. Do we need to do better as a state? Yeah, we do. And I think that Governor Walker understands that as well, and that these jobs will not come back overnight, but we are continuing to head in the right direction, and that's what's important.
Hey, look, coming out of the 2008 recession, there were going to be jobs created because you're coming out of a deep recession. Of course, there are going to be jobs created coming out of recession. Walker bet that it would be a big bounce, and he threw out that number. The real test is how is Wisconsin doing in comparison to other states coming out of that recession? And what we see, especially in the Midwest, other states bounce back much better, and that responsibility lies at Walker's feet.
Tom in Burlington is with us. Hello, Tom.
Yes, I'd like to point out that all across the nation, the Republican governors gave these big tax rebates to people, which Walker did in our state. We're paying $161 million to pay for the money that he borrowed to give away. And we were in a recession. The Democrats were in a recession. That's why we were losing the jobs. And Mr. Walker says that he tried to compare his record with Doyle's record and say he's done better. It's not true. We were in a terrible, terrible recession. It's not fair for him to say that.
Not fair to blame Doyle for the job losses of 2008.
You can play that game all day, and then you can say, well, it's not entirely Walker's fault. He's, you know, at the mercy of forces that in many cases are beyond his control. I mean, we can do that for the rest of the hour if you want.
No, I don't. Ed, do you?
No, of course not. if it's out of the hands of the governor to affect the economy, then, you know, what's the point? I mean, the fact of the matter is there are things that governors and administrations can do to prime the economy, but there's things that require a long-term payoff. And unfortunately, the election cycle means I want to run for re-election in 4 years. I need something I can claim in my TV ads and whatever was a positive effect. And so you get these short-term dramatic efforts like a tax cut, like, you know, giving money away to a company that promises to bring 200 jobs to southeastern Wisconsin. What really is necessary flies under the radar and doesn't pay off for many years, but they don't want to spend money on that because they don't get the political bounce.
Let me move on to another issue. A Republican lawmaker, Janelle Branchen of Menominee Falls, is calling for state funding cuts to Milwaukee under Mayor Tom Barrett unless Mayor Tom Barrett dramatically cuts crime in the city. Branchen said Milwaukee crime is now spilling into the suburbs and that people won't sit by while Barrett's administration destroys the regions. Milwaukee Democrats criticized her, calling her remarks irresponsible and saying it underscores anti-Milwaukee sentiment among Republicans. Chris, first, do you think that, what do you think of this threatening to cut Milwaukee funding over crime spilling into the suburbs?
Well, that old anti-Milwaukee sentiment has been, you know, a thing that gets buzzed about at the Capitol for certainly as long as I've ever, you know, even as a reporter back in the 90s, you'd hear that. And I'm sure for decades before that, the whole Milwaukee versus the rest of the state battle is real. And legislators talk about it all the time. I think, you know, I think the reaction is understandable. It is frustrating to watch parts of Milwaukee fall into deep, you know, disrepair and to see that happening under, you know, a real lack of effective leadership under Mayor Barrett. But by the same token, you know, and even the governor has said that is not necessarily the way to go, and has even talked this week about the idea of, you know, there are other programs out there that can, you know, potentially deter crime, and we ought to look at actually increasing funding for that. So I think, you know, this is an expression of frustration, and it's understandable, but I think that, you know, ultimately cooler heads are going to prevail.
Ed Flone?
Instead of just admitting this was a spur-of-the-moment Facebook comment and backing off, she doubled down and now defending it, and Republicans in the state legislature are rallying around it, and it's just sort of the reason why Facebook is a bad thing. Look, there's a huge problem right now, but it's a juvenile justice problem. We have a juvenile justice system, a set of laws that punish some crimes by juveniles too harshly, other crimes by juveniles not harshly enough. So as a result, carjacking has skyrocketed because the punishment is not effective. We have no functioning juvenile detention system right now. That's in crisis. It needs funding and an overhaul. What we need is a statewide bill to change the laws on juvenile justice and to reform the juvenile justice system. That's what we need, and that might address the problem of youth, you know, doing these carjackings. But, of course, that's a state issue and needs state leadership. So to point the finger at Mayor Barrett and the city of Milwaukee is just ridiculous.
One more national story before we end. During our 7 o'clock hour this morning, we talked about the outrage that has erupted over a California judge's decision to give a former Stanford University student a six-month jail sentence for rape. Very briefly, Ed Flone, do you think that this case is going to result in any change?
Well, I think that hopefully it will. There's been some, there's an op-ed in the New York Times today looking historically at instances where lenient sentences for rape led to outrage and over time to change. I hope this is part of it because essentially when you have an unconscious woman and a young man who takes advantage of that situation, a six-month sentence seems just hideously too low.
Any thoughts on this case, Chris?
Yeah, obviously it's sickening. This was one judge who, you know, when this character should have had the book thrown at him, got a really, really light sentence. You know, you would hope that, you know, the statement of the victim, which was a very powerful statement, will, you know, encourage other victims to step forward and speak up and remove that stigma. But, you know, by the same token, hopefully this really ridiculously light sentence doesn't discourage victims from coming forward. So it remains to be seen what the impact is going to be.
Well, we will we'll leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
Ed Flone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, and Chris Lotto, a former Communications Director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. Thanks to both of them for being with us. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up on our State Capitol Report, we'll have more on that story about Milwaukee funding and crime. Thanks to producers Bill Martins, Kai Brito, Nyasia Ellison, Brianne Shasso, and Marika Suval. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.